accept that one of the amendments that were agreed to by the NCP relates to page 2. If you can follow this process again, on page 2 of your executive amendment, line 28, we inserted after the conclusion or the situation. In other words, I will just read what it's supposed to be. Chair, the ultimate section would then read amendment of section 4 of the Act 4 of 2006. Section 4 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution of paragraph A1, item A of the following amendment. The operation of generation transmission and is removed, and then we include all distribution facilities. So that is how the change will ultimately be reflected. Well, the difference was that initially, we had all recirculation, and we had end distribution. Now we are changing it to everything there, in the sense of the state of right as well. The end, in parentheses, is being removed. Now we're saying all distribution. Is that correct, in a concern?
Originally, in the big version of the book, we have oral articulation. The oral articulation is the oral articulation behind the technical identity, as Mr. Fan has indicated, and distribution. So all that comes out is the word of oral articulation. The operation of generation or distribution is correct. So it will no longer reflect oral articulation.
If I can take that one, remember that in terms of the definition of reticulation, if I can read it in the principal as reticulation is now related to distribution, so there is no need to refer to reticulation separately. Reticulation is a subset of distribution, if I can. So we don't necessarily relate to reticulation separately, but referring to distribution, we have covered the issue of presentation. And Chair, if I continue in that vein, I think that is probably the most, if you like, difficult change that has been made, and the most difficult to follow, because the rest of them are mainly consequential. In clause 3, the clause 3 in other words, as far as clause 3, the change that has been proposed is rejected. There is no change to what you had proposed. Remember, what we're dealing with here are the changes that have been proposed by the select committee. So where we're saying that the change has been rejected, it means we revert back to what had originally proposed by itself. That's correct. I'm going to take them for that one to the extent that they relate to subsequent or consequential numbering changes. Where, for example, your 38 which is 37 and so forth. That applies to page 4 and page 5 material for what you think I need to mention what is there. It will be 20 under duty of the municipality. This becomes 27. Then from line 30, we have omitted section 1. So essentially, Chair, what we are doing there is that it will read as it's reflected on your copy. In terms of the change that was made, was that we had a 27, the original 27, and then we had a 28, which was repeating what 27 was doing. So essentially what we have now done is to just remove the 128 and then change the number. But because of that, everything underneath that will consequently change the number, and I will not go into the details. For example, 40 becomes 35, 50 becomes 28, 50 becomes 29. But the best way to follow it is that in terms of the copy that you have in front of you, what it should be, and in the iPhone 3 version. Moving on, Chair, there was an amendment that related to the principle that all tariff-related matters need to be consulted with the Minister of Finance. And that was a change that they, in fact, I think it was made to the Department of Finance that the change was. I don't think it's a controversial point, Chair, that the principle agreement that if it's money-related issues, that change there, which is that nonsense standards of the change of the inflation tariff will be in consultation with the Minister of Finance. Okay, Chair, and then there is an amendment of section 49 of the Principal Act. Consequential, I don't believe that you might have the principal in front of you. I don't think so, but it's a consequential change. That's not going to be what it's supposed to say. The one big change is the fact that when we refer to section 46, we now refer to section 84. So consequential to the changes that we have made in the numbering, section 46, the last one, section 46, now becomes section 34, which is really to let that clause to explain. And Chair, I think those are the changes that have been proposed. I think, again, just to conclude, is that the copy which leads the regulation management bill, and it's 320D in 2006, reflects and has kept up all the changes that I've said. It makes for better reading to follow this from there.
If you look at the amendment agreed to on your page, those two, I understand that anything in brackets you remove, or in brackets you remove, anything underlined you add. So in other words, those two, on page 2 from line 28, you omit, take away the end, resolution and you add oral stipulation. You add oral stipulation. Under what? If it's on the line, what do you do? Do you delete what was originally agreed to by this committee? When we add a stipulation, you are now omitting the word oral stipulation. Is that what I understand? So our addition of stipulation, which was added, is now being omitted because we added it. Okay. I understand that. Can I just ask the following? Why in clause 3? 1. It says clause rejected. Now who rejected that clause? If it was our clause which we added, which they rejected. That's it. Because they couldn't reject their own clause. I mean, they rejected our amendments to clause 1. That's it. Check through you. If we go back to the history, is that the MCOP Select Committee proposes certain amendments. Those amendments are then reduced to this list as to whether they are carried or they must be rejected, so to speak. Now, we did not submit to them, or this House, this committee did not submit to them, a list of proposals as to how to change or not to change the bill. We presented to them a bill. Right? So you went through a process of changing, including, amending, and so on. And this bill went to the House. In terms of their process, they then came with a list of amendments. So where it says the clause has been rejected, it refers to what they have seen as the bill that was presented to them.
If I may explain, the bill that was presented to the Select Committee was actually reported out the B version. And on the B version, the clause 3 read that the section as of the principal act was to be amended, and it was to be amended by inserting the word oral stipulation. And because the oral stipulation was taken out in clause 2, it was a subsequential amendment and did no longer need to amend the oral stipulation in the clause 3. And that was why the clause 3 was rejected, because it will then stay similar to the one that's contained in the principal act. So that's why the clause is rejected, because it's no longer necessary to reflect the change. And I think that is why it reads now, clause rejected, because then you revert back to the original wording in the principal act.
Because
the amendments are corrected.
Can I just, on the same issue, this document, if you want to read it, you can't read it with this fact which you gave us. You need to read it with another act, because I tried to follow it on this act and it doesn't follow because the page number is different. So we need, what do we need? We need our act, our book which we passed, and not this book. What I'm saying is, if I look at page 4, clause 11, page 4, in line 30, to omit 28 and to substitute 27, I can promise you my line 30 copy I have. There's no 28 and no 27. So what I'm saying is, you can't read this document with this document. This book. That's what I'm saying. You need to read it with another book which we don't have in front of us. So it's very difficult for us to follow it when this document, amendments agreed to, don't relate to the document, the bill, which was given to us. I don't know which copies you have, but I have my copy which was given to me. They don't care.
No, actually, it's not more about copies than you members doing your homework.
Yes.
It's more about that. See, if you have this, which is being proposed, amendments which are being proposed from the NCOP, which you all have, you also have what you did as portfolio committee. So you have both of them. Now, over and above this, whatever is needed on this, has, I assumed that you would have gone through that. Not that you are going to be starting that now. That I won't allow. No, I'm sharing. I don't need assistance. I don't have an assistant shepherd. So, just hold it there. Now, these are the things. The issue here is on the distribution. That's the only issue. What follows are numbering. We can't be sitting here and discussing about numbering. Meaning, whatever amendments we made as the portfolio committee, when it got that side, by and large, they were supported. But with this amendment, we attacked the numbering. So you find that the numbers won't be the same because of this the change which has been effected at that level. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm trying to follow the procedure because there are three bills in front of us. One is 20G, 20A, and 20B. The amendments agreed to relate to 20B. It relates to page 4, line 13, 28 reflected by 20, replaced by 27. That's how it reflects. I'm trying to understand the procedure because we've gone through this procedure before and there's been a muddle up somewhere along the line. Now, all I'm trying to understand is the eventual result, in my view, is 20G. The eventual result is 20G because 20A was the original portfolio committee as agreed to by the portfolio committee. G, as amended by the portfolio committee, A is agreed to. Now, I would understand if it's agreed to, then it's finished. Now, I see it's amended to in B, C I'm missing, and D as amended by the select committee. So, if you could just make me understand my small reference framework, you know, what happened, I think that's quite easy.
The A is the list of amendments that should capture all the amendments. So you will just have the lines and the words that are the amendments agreed to. Your B bill is the bill that incorporates all the amendments. So the committee, when it decides whether to accept the amendments, prefers to look at the B bill and then vote on the B bill. So the B bill was the one that was voted on by the portfolio committee after the amendments had been agreed. Then it went to the select committee, and then they had a C bill, and that's also just listing the proposed amendments. So it's just a capturing all the proposals. But the effect of it will then be captured in the D bill, so all the amendments that were agreed upon and how it will ultimately look is then captured in the D bill. But that must also be read with, because it is simple, it must be read with the principal act, and that's why we say some of it will relate to the principal act and some will not relate to the principal act. Is there anything else that I must clarify?
No, that's fine. I think we all have to clarify.
Thank you. Let's start another question. When we are now reading the committee report, what we have done in the past, before this amendment, from the MCOP, report of the portfolio committee on minerals and energy on electricity regulation amendment Bill 20B of 2006 in the National Assembly, section 76(1), dated 13th of June 2007. The portfolio committee on minerals and energy, having considered the electricity regulation amendment Bill 20B of 2006, National Assembly Section 76(1) and proposed amendment of the National Council of Provinces as it appeared on the announcement tapings and committee reports of the 29th of May 2007 on page 958 referred to the committee report the deal with amendment, Bill 20C of 2007. Umbigo ke loyo bantu bakithi report honorable chief with Mr. Lowe.
F.K. Lowe. Thank you, Chair. I move and accept and propose that we accept the budget amendment.
Proposal by Honorable Chief Whip F.K. Lowe. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I second the move of the week.
It will follow normal procedure. It should go back where it comes from. Is there any objection? No objection. Thank you very much, Member. We pass to the next point on our agenda, which is the deliberation, informal deliberation on the MPRDA amendment. I see here on my program, I have advocate Martin Molonela, Chief Director, Mineral Regulation, in the Department of Minerals and Energy. And so far, I don't know whether it's my eyes. I've not seen the man. So we have been waiting for you for the past 20 minutes. Okay. We will straight away give it to you, Advocate Mononeta. I must, members, indicate that there are people who have raised some interest in the process, who have indicated in one way or the other that these amendments are affecting them as well. So they would need some sort of input. We have Professor Keith Engel, and I don't know whether it's spelled correctly or S is missing at the end, or it's Engel, not Engel. Okay, that is Engel from Treasury. We also have had some communique from the Department of Environmental and Tourism, which is DIT. We also had something from APA. I'm not mentioning this, member, so that we keep that in mind. We'll give the team from the Department of Minerals and Energy. Some of these things I understand they have to do with the taxation and something which may be money bills at the end of it all. And because of that, because this is the informal deliberation on the matter by the committee, we will invite Professor Engel to raise some of those related points. immediately after the first the main presentation. On the MPRCA amendment. Honorable Chair and honorable members of the committee, the department has been presented the bill to the portfolio committee, and then the subsequent to it was the consideration of the public hearing, comments and inputs that they've given to the department. Then subsequent to that, the Chair, we have looked into those comments, and the department made some suggestions as per the Chair. We are struggling to get a document since this morning. The machine. Once more, Chair, here with me is Ms. Lindy Wei Mekwe, Director of Mineral Policy. On my extreme left is Mr. Eddie Swart, Director of Environment. My extreme left again is Ms. Lejingwana, Chief Director of Mineral Regulation, and again extreme left again is Mrs. Ndombela, Chief Director, Mineral Regulation. They are all my colleagues in the department, and when considering this, public, both, branches did, contribute. So they will all, participate in this, sharing. Can we start, Chair, with the first page here? I wonder whether everybody sees what is on the screen. We will provide shortly a written document It's just that unfortunately the technology displayed us this morning. We did print, but it unfortunately have the document. Thank you. To start with, Mrs. Meko will be done with some of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Committee, for the time afforded to us to give to you the consequential amendment that we are actually putting before you for you to adopt in terms of whatever that came out from the public hearing and also what we feel that it is in a good implementation of the legislation. So I will present on the general aspect of the legislation and the resource will take over on the environmental aspect. But through the presentation that we are going to make, we are going to identify issues that have been identified by the presenters who presented in the last presentation. So starting from the first proposal that we are putting before you is about the designated areas. We felt because of the announcement that was made before the public, before the functional committee during the public hearing on the transferability of the function of the designated agency to be transferred to the department basically on the regulatory function. We felt that the department that this is a proposal that we can put under the long statute in this case for the regulatory functions that were done by the designated agency to be transferred to the Department of Minerals and Energy and be conducted by the National Office. And this is the first amendment that we did on the long statute. And then on issue of the amendment bill, because of the input that were raised by the LRP pertaining to the community not reading its substantial status in terms of the NCRPA, we felt that okay in terms of us recognizing the status of the community, we'll put an addition of the community on the socio-economic development of communities that definition. And then, another thing that they have raised during the public hearing of which we presented to you last week that is the consideration that we are going to make is on the definition of the community. They actually proposed that the Department of Minerals and Energy must redefine or substitute the definition of the community as it was stated in the Principal Act in order to give effect to the historically disadvantaged persons with interest or right in a particular area of land which the members have or exercise community interest of an agreement custom and all that, even the proviso was actually indicated today in relation to whatever environmental requirements so that the community can be consulted if ever they will be affected by any activity that will happen around their land. So another thing that we see, another consideration that we did was on the competent authority. This came as an announcement from the previous public hearing by the DDP announced that the Department of Environmental Affairs had to attempt agreement to recognize the Minister of Water and Energy as a competent authority to exercise environmental requirements. And that will get an explanation for at least how the competent authority has addressed the question.
Thank you, Chief. Maybe I should just read the definition of the competent authority. For the purposes of Section 24C1 of the National Environmental Management Act, and in respect of mining, processing, petroleum exploration, production, or related activities, means the Minister of Mineral Energy in evaluating the environmental impact and grant, amend, or refuse an environmental authorization in respect of that activity. And a consequential amendment to this effect will also be made in terms of NEMA.
Basically, what will happen here is that
in view of the definition of the Minister of Mineral Energy as a competent authority in terms of matters pertaining to environment, there will be a consequential amendment by this legislation before Parliament, which would necessitate the amendment of NEMA, in whereby the NEMA would also recognize the Minister of Minerals and Energy as a competent authority to deal with any aspect of mining, as long as that aspect deals with the environment.
Okay, still under the definition, because of the first amendment that we give on the designated SNC, we have actually deleted the reference question into the definition of the designated SNC because of those amendments that are actually mentioned on the website. And then another new insertion that we thought we should propose was on the effective date. So the effective date, according to the proposed amendment, we said means the date on which the relevant permit is issued or the relevant right is going to be executed. So this effective date will actually be seen when a person reads under the granting and duration of the right, that the effective date of the right will only happen once the right has been executed and also once the permit has been issued. And then still on page three, because of the proposal that we received from the Chamber of Mines, we felt that, okay, the definition of exclusionary act has to be deleted from the act, and then that is the proposed amendment that we are pushing forward to the portfolio committee to recognize that the department has actually realized the comments raised by the Chamber to delete the exclusionary act. And then another point that is pertaining to financial provision, of which we have actually deleted the insurance and comma banks and substituting it with the financial guaranteed. And then this particular financial provision definition was actually done in consultation with the Department of Finance headed by the National Treasury Office.
We have also deleted reference to section 41A, as we got agreement from National Treasury that that would be included in guidelines rather than putting it in legislation. And we've also deleted the reference to work plans.
It was on the definition of the historically disadvantaged persons. What we said is that we have actually inserted is managed and controlled by a person, the jurisdiction person, other than an association which is managed and controlled. That is a new insertion that we have put, and from there by a person contemplated in paragraph A, and that the person as a single entity or as a group. That is an insertion that we made on the existing definition of historically disadvantaged person, and we also added a subparagraph 2 to indicate it's a subsidiary of juristic person contemplated in subsection subparagraph 1. On page 4 of the bill, we have deleted the clause sentence 28 and 31 with the definition of a mining area in relation to a mining right or mining permit means the area or with the extraction of any mineral has been authorized. And then that is an exception that we did in considering the definition of a mining area. And then on the reconnaissance operation, we have considered the proposal made by the DBS in putting an acquisition and processing of a new seismic data to the definition of a reconnaissance operation.
With regard to residue deposit and residue stockpile, I can maybe just handle them together. The one issue that was missing is we didn't include previously old order rights. And in the definition of residue deposits means any residue stockpile remaining at the termination, cancellation, or expiry of a prospecting right, mining permit, exploration right, and the production right, as well as old order right. And we've also effected the same amendment to the residue stockpile. It should go on then. With regard to the definition of waste, we've included the definition of waste because residue deposits and residue stockpiles is not regarded as waste. It is a mineral resource still to be mined. So we've put the definition of waste in order to also, on the mining area, control other waste such as municipal waste from offices or oil, etc. So the definition means unwanted substance, whether solid, liquid, or gaseous, other than residue deposits and stockpiles, which is discharged, emitted, or deposited on a prospecting, mining, exploration, or production area.
Another amendment that we propose is on the object of the Act that is actually under the Section 2. So what we did here, we considered the inputs or proposals made by the LRC to recognize the community, and then we have actually added under Section 2A, particularly This particular 2E is actually make reference to the promotion of and the development of a downstream industry through provision of feedstock and development of mining and petroleum input industry. This is particularly on the development and promotion of the beneficiation. So on Section 2E, we have added 2D, we have added the inclusion of communities to be for the interest of those communities and the opportunities to be extended and also to benefit from the exploitation of the nation's mineral and petroleum resources.
With regard to Section 5, Clause 4, we have just included, again, approved environmental management plan. It was taken out previously, and we've also added the environmental authorization. The reason why we need to have the approved environmental management plan is a dedicated dynamic document that you actually approve, and the mines are being monitored, audited, and it's also being used for mine closure. So that specific document must be approved.
Another amendment is on page 5, that is on the new insertion of on Section 9. We have actually requested, because of the input that we see from the public, that we remove the whole insertion of subsection 3 from the bill. Page 5 again, on Section 5.4, subsection 4, we have actually deleted it under Section 5 to put it in a separate section because of it makes reference to the provision relating to illegal operation. So all the provision of subsection 4, we have actually tried for a new insertion to cater for all the provisions related to illegal operations because of the actual return to illegal operation other than the legal nature of the right. On clause 7, we have inserted the new subsection 5, which reads, affecting a prescribed any of the transactions mentioned in subsection 4 above, before obtaining the necessary prior approval of the minister, will render the transaction without force and effect and may be cancelled in terms of section 47. This new insertion is actually supporting the reference pertaining to any interest that can be transferred without the ministers having any knowledge or consent to the transaction. So we are putting a prohibition pertaining to that, that if that can be done, that will render it as a, the action will be rendered. This particular contravention to this particular transaction will be an offense, and then we wanted to put it there to give effect to the provisions of section 11.1. And there is also a consequential amendment that we thought that we have to put it under section 47 to support the statement of the new insertion of subsection 5 to say that in case whereby a person will transfer any interest of the company without the prior written approval of the minister, the minister must cancel or suspend that particular right.
That will come from here, only highlighting what you inserted after with your flat. Because remember that we went section by section, page by page. But in the event that we're not reinventing the wheel on issues we've done. Issues we have clarified. It's because what the major thing for us, that's why I thought by now you've just been through, the major issues for us would have been those which in the process of discussion and clarification came. Not everything, because we'll find time ourselves to deal with whatever we need to. But what then emanated, you know. And whilst I'm at that, I want to say that as I indicated earlier on, I thought we would, you know, zoom into those areas which seem to be contentious issues. For instance, we have issues from DET, which you did touch on. On the competent authority in the name of the Minister of Minerals and Energy as it relates to this act and attitude. But I thought perhaps you would indicate that there are outstanding matters or what have you, or we are still dealing with them, because from the point of view of environment, there have been issues which have been raised this one. That's one. The other relates to what I would think emanates from, because, you know, the industry, Chamber of Commerce, all other people were there and so on, you did respond to. You did show us where you agree with them, where you don't agree with them. But there are people who have been engaged into discussions with, like your colleagues in the DC, for instance, like Sandra, like what you are going to be getting now, what has been your views, because we want all these views. We do not want to have a situation where there are fundamental objections to some of the things, perhaps not from the industry, but from your own colleagues at the level of department and so on. As we move forward to deliberate and, you know, adopt the process, we want, when we reach at that, which is supposed to be Friday, the 15th, Friday, when we reach there, we do not want any smoke, any dust, so far as the process is concerned. I'm mentioning those two, and I did mention earlier on Bamba as well. And to me, those would be the matters would want you to present to us and say these are the matters, perhaps excluding the treasury, because the delegation from treasury had made that as part of government, made that request. Can we have zoom in though? Because I don't think necessarily we want to we want to get into a process of numbering, that because of a change, numbering was affected. No, I don't think so. I think we'd want on substantive issues. There were some questions which were asked by, for instance, the state law advisor, which I think perhaps in the process they will clarify, they will know. They will hear that from you. And some legal questions coming from members themselves, which you responded to at the meeting. So I'm saying, help us to deal with these substantive issues now, and whoever is raising whatever view, which is not necessarily captured then with your own understanding as the Department of Human Rights.
I think we will start with the definition of competent authority, and then I'll just give some background to the honourable members on the issue.
I'm not sure I understand, because what the department is doing now is just presenting the word-by-word amendments to the vote, which we should have. Now, I thought it was part of the process of informal deliberation in terms of putting forward not only the views on the board, but also how it in fact teaches out on the board. And I thought this was an important discussion, which this committee must have. And we would like to shortcut the discussion, but unfortunately, this is the nitty-gritty, the consequence of all those public hearings and amendments by the DME. So this is a very important part, in my view, which we should entertain in order to discuss. We don't even have the document. I cannot give an input if we don't even hear what is being said, despite even having a document. So I would suggest that in terms of practical purposes, let the DME continue indicating how they intend amending the act or the bill, word by word, and then we can discuss it when we have the document. But it's a vital process.
No, we are not going to take that on this meeting. We are not. Precisely because we have gone through this process. All what we want here, which must be prioritized, are the substantive issues, not what you have gone through. Unless you say, in what they are saying, there is something new they are coming up with. In the absence of anything new, we sat like this last week and did the same thing. In the process and in the event that there is nothing new they are raising to us, it's better suited that we deal with that ourselves as a committee. What I'm raising with them are substantive issues which have not been captured last week, which are not captured here now. Now, I then am saying, are there such things? Because to me, those are the issues. The issue is on the amendment, not on the numbering. That we can do ourselves. They can take us through that without taking us paragraph by paragraph. They can say that we've changed this number because they have taken us on clause per clause last week. That is done. But it's the hidden cost, if you like, I think we need to, we are more interested on. Because we cannot just dismiss. We've heard what the industry has said. We've heard the department responding to the industry. We've not heard some of the voices which are, in a way, colleagues of the department, which have not come before us yet, but which have been raised officially. And we say, let's deal with those first, because you see, you'll find out that if we deal with those, the entire numbering itself will change again, because we have had new things which have not been dealt with by the Department of Minerals and Energy, but which federal things are important, which PASA, which is part of the DME, thing are important, which SANRAL will think are important. So that's the thing. Let's get that from the department. And then what we'll do, members, we will assist you with those you don't have For instance, what Jeet has raised, and I got this morning, I see of him, which I think we should. For instance, other submissions like Sandran are there in your own package. If then there is no agreement between what they are raising, I'm making an example, and what the department raises, then that would have to be left without to say what do we do in this kind of a situation. But we would want to give everybody an opportunity. We want this bill, this amendment, to be effected as soon as possible. But we're not going to rush over simply because we have to reach a deadline on in terms of something. If we have to change the deadline, programming week, whatever you are in the program, we would have to do that. That's it.
Jefferson, now you are 100% correct, but one of the biggest concerns is it is of no use, Chair, to continue this process and yet these other issues that you mentioned are still outstanding. Wouldn't it be better to consult with those institutions first, and then the department can, after the consultation, can come up and say, we have consulted Treasury, DAF, and the other Petros Foundation thing. We consult with them for just is their view. And then we take what you said, the way forward. But it won't help us, Chairman, to take only the change of numbering and all that kind of things now, and yet we have to come and do it again and again. I propose, Chair, that the way that you put it should be the best one, that the department must go back and consult with their colleagues, the other departments involved, so that they, after that, they came back with a baked potato, a ready-made potato.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think we're still in cross services. I'm aware that there's other inputs as well. Whether we postpone this input by the DME at the later stage, I'm in agreement. You know, I'm not saying we should have it today. I was in the impression that we're here for the surface, that they could make us aware as to what the actual result is of the amendment. But if we agree to postpone this discussion to a later date, in order to allow for other inputs, then I'm more than happy to say yes, it's a correct procedure. Because I myself would like to have certain other issues also put in the cooking pot. The bottom of the building, you can come back to us after having considered other amendments, other issues. So if that's the procedure, I'm 100% fine with that.
Whatever you put in the cooking pot, you'll be putting it with your colleagues on here. They won't be here. So you'll be expected to be deciding on the matter. Let's give the advocate here. And, you see, we're not putting you on the spot here. If perhaps with this plethora of issues in front of you, you have not really engaged on them, we are not saying scratch your head now and respond. So thank you very much. The document we are presenting to you, it is as a result of a lengthy debate within government departments, parastatal organizations like the Sandra, which has just made an input. We are here dealing with a legal matter that would encapsulate everybody. Everybody must be in that particular part. Let me start with the deed, which she will also elaborate extensively. Even last night, we were still in the discussion as we speak, including the state the state sorry, not state administrator, but
So, and we had a number of discussions and also teleconference, as you know, last week, you know, our DDG, the DDG in the DG, the Chief State Law Advisor, Mr. Inver Daniel. Even last night, that was done. So maybe we'd like to give you the whole background so that members can understand. And eventually, last night, we came up with an agreed in the sense that this will be implementable. It will not, you know, create a situation whereby, you know, further regulations hamper, you know, investor friendly of this mining, our mining, laws in the country. So she will, elaborate, just a brief, on the historical, background of the whole thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to provide some background, I think I really need to go back to the environmental functions that the Department of Minerals and Energy and the Minister regulated in terms of the Minerals Act of 1991. We always had an environmental function pertaining to mining in terms of the legislation. And the Department of Minerals and Energy was the first department regulating environment in South Africa. So historically, that was the first piece of legislation on environment in the legislation. And it was always a problem because mining and related activities is the only activity not listed in terms of the previous Environment Conservation Act as well as now in terms of NEMA, because of the historical part of mining was always dealt with already in the legislation. If you list mining, it would have caused duplication. Otherwise, you cannot deal with environmental issues pertaining to mining in terms of two pieces of legislation. Now, what the DGs of Environment Affairs and Minerals and Energy agreed to was that the Department of Environment Affairs can list mining, processing mining and related activities, but that the Minister of Minerals and Energy must be the competent authority, that we will follow a similar EIA procedure by adopting national norms and standards, that we should not upset the existing process too much. Now, with that agreement, the officials of the Department of Minerals and Energy and Environment Affairs worked extensively on specific amendments. And seemingly, so now, we cannot reach agreement on the amendment. And I will tell you why. They need to identify, in terms of NEMA, the minister as the competent authority. The specific section in NEMA doing that is 24C1. So, for the purposes of Section 24C1 of the National Environmental Management Act, the Minister of Minerals and Energy must be identified as the competent authority for mining, prospecting, and all those activities in evaluating the environmental impact and to grant, amend, refuse environmental authorization in respect of that activity. But what the Department of Environment Affairs is proposing, because they need to make a consequential amendment. If you look at your submission, it talks about 24C1, but we need to add a bit onto that definition of competent authority that will be in our legislation. We will even say that we will make regulations, the minister will make regulations in consultation with the Minister of Environment Affairs on aspects like application for environmental authorizations, basic assessment reports, standard environmental management plans, scoping reports. These are all the aspects relating to EIAs and the procedures, requirements in terms of EIAs. Now, furthermore, the competent authority that the Department of Environment Affairs wants to adopt consequentially in their legislation is inconsistent with the competent authority that we propose. And I will tell you and highlight the specific issues. If you look at the competent authority ABC in the submission, in respect of illicit activity or specified activity means A, the Minister, which is the Minister of Environment Affairs, B, the Minister of Mineral Energy for the purposes of prospecting, mining, petroleum exploration, production or related activities or mining related activities, and C, an organ of state. And then it all goes to charged by this Act with evaluating the environmental impact of that activity and, where appropriate, with granting, amending, or refusing an environmental authorization in respect of that activity. Now, that's the problematic, because they have an amendment in the Second Amendment NEMA Bill, where they say that the Minister of Mineral Energy will not always be the competent authority if it's in the interest of environmental policy, and we don't really know what is that interest of environmental policy, or if it transfers provincial boundaries. And we currently make decisions transversing provincial boundaries. And if it's on in prescribed areas, and we the Minister currently makes decisions on EIAs in prescribed areas by consulting with her colleagues. Now they say in those instances, it must be the Minister of Environment Affairs and not the Minister of Minerals and Energy, which we found problematic. You cannot let the Minister of Minerals and Energy be the competent authority in certain instances and not in all instances. You will create loopholes because the mining industry will misuse these things to create loopholes. And that was not the decision from the policy of the political leaders. The political leaders decide that the Minister of Minerals and Energy must be the competent authority in terms of all instances. So, and the rider on environmental policy interest is so wide. What will you do under that? When are you going to apply to the Minister of Environment Affairs? When are you going to apply to the Minister of Minerals and Energy? So from the DE side, we are trying to make it clear, in all instances, on a prospecting mining production area and related activities, it will be the Minister of Minerals and Energy, in all instances, and not in certain, just in certain some instances. Now that seems to be the stumbling block, and from the DE side, we are adopting what we have. And I must say the state law advisors have tried to intervene in order to get a workable proposal. And last night we have agreed on what we have there and not what the DG is proposing. So it is just proposals. And, you know, I think that the political leaders must probably make a decision on that.
On environmental affairs, the mine and mining area definition has that been covered in the understanding of minerals and energy. By saying, do we have a question? Let's pass, and because I therefore think, insofar as environmental affairs are concerned, insofar as their proposals are concerned, in the presence of the state law advisor, DME representative, and his representative. The understanding is what the Minerals and Energy raised with us as well in the committee. Okay, if I may add, do recall that the chamber wanted to address the full committee on matters of environment, and the PPG that time said there is now an agreement between the department and the DEED, and then that prompted the chamber not to go ahead and presenting the environment during the public hearing, because they were very concerned about the initial proposal. But in view of the understanding that, okay, the Minister of Minerals and Energy will be considered, will be a competent authority to issue any environmental related authorization pertaining to mining, only to mining. So the chamber was comforted by that. We went on to work around that. And the state law advisors, we had a meeting with them both in Pretoria, in Cape Town, and the agreement was, let's deal with this matter in as far as the specialized industry context, because mining is a very specialized industry. You cannot talk about the environment pertaining to any other area, because there's also a piece of legislation. It's not a question of just having a regulation to just be hit up by people. Piece of legislation which my colleague has already highlighted. Now, having agreed on that, last night we came up with the definition, and the definition which will result into the consequential amendment of NEMA to enable the Minister of Minerals and Energy to issue environmental related authorization in mining industry only. However, the understanding of them is that she must issue the environmental blanket. So the problem is, on the industry also taking advantage of that, and then we find that we are in a big other issue. So the intervention from the state law advisor, it was very helpful. Hence, we have arrived to this. So apparently, the document came in the absence of the understanding that the state law advisor has intervened, and through that intervention, a resolution was found. Thank you, Chair.
Is there anyone who wants to comment on the deed issues? Hello?
Chairperson, with all respect, and I'm very humble to say that to you, the document dates the 13th of June. That you have just prepared. Chairperson, I appeal to you. I emphasize the fact that you are correct. This document contradicts exactly what the Honorable Advocate and his team said. Chairperson, mining is not only a specialized industry, but a rusty industry also. You know what I want to appeal to you, Chair? That proper consultation must be made. Proper consultation. Yes, I hear what the advocate said that they are consulted with the state law advisor. I take that. But Chair, because of the importance, this vote is one of the most critical votes in this government.
that we cannot play around with. Justice Department, are faced with serious legal challenges. And to avoid that, Chair, I would really propose that proper consultation must be done. Let us not steamroll this bill through and at the end of it, a heap of court cases will be faced with after we in fact have done this. So Chair, I appeal to you. Let us take this, let us go and study this document. Let the department go through it and consult with their stakeholders that you've mentioned, their colleagues. And then we will be satisfied, Chair. I know that we are not taking the powers away of anybody. At the end of the day, it is comfortable if the Minister of Minerals and Energy can do this and can do that. But in the process, there are casualties. And who is the one who is going to suffer? The HDSA are going to suffer. One. Two, it is going to prolong the process in order for you to get a permit or a license. Chairperson, I appeal to you. Please, Chair, let us go and consult properly on this issue. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I cannot but agree with Mr. Lurk. It should be recorded. I cannot but more agree with him. I would venture and I would lean towards the idea that the Minister, of course, would have or should need the authority to do that. But I think we also need to listen why he, at this point in time, is still unhappy about why certain issues need to be phrased in the and he needs that. I don't know, but it seems to be a dramatic policy issue. GEET has always been the department by environmental impact issues, or whatever, environmental issues. I think let's just grant him opportunity of understanding why they disagree with the department.
Is there anyone who wants to comment on this? No. Well, in the absence of anyone who wants to comment, we will take on board what you just said, both your members, with one caution. We are not going to have to be having a consultation forever.
No.
That's one thing. And if we deal with that, we must also understand how far the consultation has gone. It's something else, consultation, it's another disagreement. We must differentiate between the two. Because we may lock ourselves in a process which will never end. Because people will never agree. That's what I'm going to do. We will come back to this matter. See what we'll do now. We'll give the Treasurer the opportunity to address us on this related matter of tax and so on. But before we conclude the business of the day, we'll come back to this question. I'll then ask Professor Engels and the team to come and address us.
Thank you.
That was my first meeting. Thank you, Jack, for that.
Sure, thank you for the opportunity. Let me just say from a Treasury PME side that we've been fully consulting with each other, and I think everything is moving along rather well. So I'm not sure what else is being discussed, but at least our two departments are on board. In terms of just environment, just to mention briefly, there were a few modifications on the fiscal provisioning. We're both in agreement. A number of issues, such as the specific definition of financial provision for trust funds, was taken off as a little too inflexible, and we felt it was best to leave it to regulation. And I think what we will be working on, you'll see in September, is that the tax regime is trying to promote incentives for environmental rehabilitation, and we will work on regulation. So I think everything is moving along there rather well.
Good.
We've come a long way since the diamond levy had begun and all these other things. But needless to say, that everything is fine. Now, this is a slightly different matter on the next dealing with the rehabilitation. I don't know if you've given out. I've just given out a one-pager. And basically, a little background at the bottom. There's just a proposal here. I'm sure that the community is going to want to massage this a little bit. And that's fine. We have no problem with that. This is really last-minute amendment, and I apologize for that. Trying to get two departments to agree is one thing. Another is to coordinate is another. And we're doing the best we can, and I think actually we're doing pretty good. But unfortunately, on our side, we were a little late. What this issue is about is promoting junior mining exploration companies. And in the 2007 budget review, our minister announced that we were looking into promote a tax incentive for junior mining companies, because the purpose of the Mineral Petroleum Resource Development Act wasn't just about transformation, it was about bringing in foreign investment and opening up new territories. Because unfortunately, the old regime felt that they wanted to let a lot of areas sit, and so thought we had to use it or lose it principle and so forth. Well, the guys that we're trying to encourage is junior mining exploration, because there's two kinds of mining companies. Well, not two, but there are many. But many of the companies that we're talking about are ones where you have static companies, they are extracting, so forth. They might do brownfields exploration, but they don't do risky kind of exploration, opening up vast new territories. And what has happened is the Canadians had the same problem many years back, and what they were trying to promote was people who were willing to take a risk. So what the Canadians did, they created a regime, and it wasn't just a tax regime, it was also a regulatory regime, where they were trying to promote junior mining companies. And what they did is they said, if you are a junior mining company and people want to invest in you, you will get a special deduction. It will be a special incentive. And for one reason or another, in Canada, this took off quite well. And now Canada is the leading country in the world for junior mining exploration. And now they are all over the world investing. Well, with the Canadian Embassy and others, there is some attempt to bring that here. And they want to invest here, and they want to see if we can replicate that within South Africa. So this was the discussion, the debate. Now, at the same time we have this debate going on, Treasury is always very careful about putting in tax incentives, because everybody wants tax. So what Treasury's overall philosophy has been for the last 7 years is no incentives, lower the rates, broaden the base. But there are times we carefully consider incentives, and that is what is being discussed today. But again, it's a careful balancing, and once you start, you go down a road. But what we're trying to do here is this. What we're thinking of is if we're going to move an incentive, we want to move in sync with the DME so that the regulatory regime and the tax regime complement each other. Because tax incentives only work if you have a regulatory regime that has special adjustments. And one of the things that you find is that a one-size-fits-all approach in law, while it's great for professors, and I was a professor in a former life, it works great, you get to real life and you find you need to make compromises. And so what we're trying to do here is get the two to work hand in hand. Unfortunately, timing is different. If we do an amendment, it will happen in 2008, and the NPRDA amendments will all occur in 2007. So the key is how to put the two together. What we propose in here, and this is my language, and again, DME will massage and adjust, and that's fine, is to give the Minister of DME the authority to promote prospecting by junior mining companies in South Africa, and to do this by regulations such as prescribed. And in making that, they can make adjustments to the basic rules of the NPRDA, such as conditions for getting a license, for maintaining a license, maybe some of the conditions around the license. And then these adjustments also can take into account the mineral concern. For example, you might say, well, do we really need incentives for platinum? Well, I know that a lot of people would like incentives for platinum. The question is, well, are they coming already anyway? So you have to make those decisions, because one of the two issues that Treasury is going to be worried about if we have an incentive. One, is this incentive going to be misused? We talked about loopholes. I heard the phrase before. DME is not uncommon to that. Neither is Treasury. The second is deadweight loss. You don't want to incentivize something that they're going to come anyway. So this gives the Minister the authority to do that. What will happen is the Minister will have authority to make adjustments to the rules, and we'll be in consultation. The DME will decide what they think this is a reasonable adjustment. And then at the same time, we are going to try to define what is a junior mining company. That will be defined in our act, and if we define it in our act, then this thing becomes effective. If it turns out Treasury looks into this proposal and is not comfortable, this amendment will not be effective. What we wanted to make sure is that DME is not left in a situation where the Minister is given authority for incentives, we don't act, and then DME is under pressure to do things unilaterally. We don't want that to happen. We either go together or we don't go at all. Now, basically, just to go back to the tax, this is just a space-holding thing to give the DME the authority once we move forward. The basic rule for the tax system that is under discussion is if you invest, normally you don't get a deduction up front. But if you invest in a junior mining company, the theory is that an investor will get a deduction up front. And the purpose of the immediate deduction is that exploration is very risky. So you can have a loss very quickly. And so we're trying to assist and share in that loss in order to promote exploration for the long-term longevity of the act. Now, the only thing to be said here is that I want to be very careful. This amendment is a placeholder. I am not the Minister of Finance. Ambitious fellow, but I think that my minister would be a bit problematic if I said I was a Minister of Finance. And needless to say, the point is that this is a placeholder because the study is underway. We want to see if this thing works. There are two views. One view says this is the greatest thing on earth. Another view says, well, we're not so sure. We need to resolve that as a department, and our minister must decide what the outcome is. To the extent that DME is able to create flexible rules, I think that helps the case along. So this is merely a placeholder to see if we can proceed. And that's all it is. But it's important that if we do proceed, this will make the whole incentive a lot better. Anyway, I hope that's enough. And you can go to T, assuming that the questions were properly answered.
Assuming that there was a statement. No, I think clearly, what maybe before junior companies, junior mining companies, which companies are we referring to? Indigenous companies outside of No, I'm asking when you relate to junior mining companies, the indigenous companies or companies outside of the shores of.
In order to make the incentive work, it's going to have to be a South African legal entity. So it doesn't work with a foreign entity. But the investors will probably be foreign and some domestic. It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. It is a South African company where foreigners and domestics will both invest. The people who are going to care about this incentive are people with a tax base. One of the key things is trying to bring in the Canadian tax base a little bit. So it's just, it will be, it can only work with the South African company. Will there be indigenous or historically disadvantaged people involved? Very well, maybe that. I think to some extent the key is to make sure that we're able to bring in the money and then make sure that we can get that element involved. And the question is how, simply as that. But nothing is precluded. But the purpose, the way we will define it in the Tax Act, again, we have not fully defined that, is the early thinking, that is the early thinking, is we're looking for a pure exploration company. We're not talking about a mining company as such. We're looking for somebody who has taken the risk of exploration. And the way these exploration companies work is they explore and they sell. So they find the great, wonderful thing. They say, now that we have taken the big risk, they will then turn it over to a larger company. At that point, all the same rules will fully apply, such as 26% BEE and all of that. I don't think anything is going to be discussed around that. And I'm not even sure what changes will be made in the regulation. What we need to do is consult the industry and the various players to see what rules really are a barrier. And that's really what it is. But it will be a local company, and that's the short answer.
That have been granted to BEE who do not have access to finance. And currently they cannot do it for prospecting because they have a problem of finance. As a result, what they are doing, once they realize that I've got the right, I've got this document, I'm sitting with it, I'm not doing anything with it, I would rather sell the right to people who can afford prospecting.
I'm very careful after last week's meeting of Treasury. I'm very careful. They can be, I don't know, they what's our privilege of so, Chair, that does apply to all commodities in the industry, or only to specific commodities. And if that is the case, Chair, where is the exit of that investment company?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the Treasury needs to make sure the economy grows, not the finance. We want to make sure it grows the right way. We're looking at it from a different point of view, but can I say, it seems to me, because there's kind of a jerk reaction, because we've got this whole act with political evidence, and then here comes the fraud, and kind of just opens it up, you know, say, the minister may do anything. And it's basically what it says, the minister may do anything to promote. But I to a certain degree, I looked again, and it seems to classify it into a very narrow band. It's a junior, you say mining company, but it's a junior mining company. And secondly, it says, prospect, so it's limited to those, and it's a very severe limitation. It cannot be abused, if I understand it correctly, by middle management, senior medium sized, other mining activities such as mining, small scale mining, or it cannot be used by a medium sized mining company for small medium scale mining. In other words, it's a very limited application.
Yes, thanks very much. I think it's been a very exciting input. However, you've got to avoid exploitation in this whole system. And I think what is very important is the definition of what is a junior mining company. Because if you succeed there, you will kill all the loopholes.
Quickly, so you get your key. Let me just say this. I think the point that was raised with you is I think the exact point the people have come before us and said, look, we have paper, but we don't have money. We don't got no money, we got no honey. That's the way it works, right? And so you got to be able to invest, and the idea is to bring in the people so that we can we can bring in those investors to invest in those companies. And that's the whole point. So that is one of the things that we're trying to push. The point is so that's that. Now, the other issues is let's just talk about the definition. At the moment, we're debating the definition. So we couldn't put it in yet. Because there are people who come forward and they want to enlarge that definition. They, immediately the lobbyists come forward, oh, let's do a little, let's do more, let's do more, let's do more. We in the PAC have a number of special rules for small business. This is really small business mining, you can look at it as. And so, you're not talking artisanal, because junior mining companies can be fairly large. But what you're talking about is trying to get people who are really just interested in the business of exploration and on the smaller size scale. The problem is we don't have enough facts yet to determine exactly what that is, and that's what the current study is working on. So we are clearly going to box that in. Otherwise, just as much as we're putting DME at risk, we're also putting the tax system at risk. I mean, we have these rules here are sacrosanct, but just as DME has its rules that are sacrosanct. So that's the way they are. There is this point you were raising about exit and entry. I think these mining companies, what we're envisioning is a company, an exploration company that prospects. Once it decides it wants to go into mining or gets bigger, then it would have to shed its benefits at that point and say, well, now we want to be something else. Well, then you lose all the benefits of being a junior mining exploration company. Doesn't mean you get them reversed, but, once you're going into other things, well, then you shouldn't be getting other incentives anymore. And just to note, last week, we seem to have an issue around what we were doing. I think just to say, and we'll say this again last week, there was this $3 billion cutoff you kept talking about in the diamond levy bill. And you kept saying we were being more generous to De Beers and some of the larger players. It sounds great. The thing is that what we were trying to do is make sure that the larger companies stayed in the net. So if you kept a net of $5 billion net, what would happen is that the larger companies are subject to more difficult requirements. The larger you are, the more beneficiation you're required to do. So if at the moment we had a $5 billion threshold to be large, we lowered the $3 billion threshold to make sure that the people who were large were a bigger category, so that the big people couldn't escape out of that tougher regime. So the point was that we were actually making it tougher on the bigger guys, not softer. But it's hard when you see a threshold, you think something else is going on. But I just wanted to make that point, that we were actually doing reverse of what you thought we were doing. We were trying to say that, and I'm willing to go through that debate again. But we were actually tightening up to make sure larger companies made sure they played a larger role in beneficiation, not a smaller one. So that's just a footnote in the last week.
The commodity point.
The commodity point here is we have to sit down and decide whether we want this to be all or some. As a general matter, we in PAC like to say all minerals. That's the general presumption we have. DME may advise us to the contrary, and if they do, then we will take a different course. The key is, what are we trying to promote prospecting in? What do we hope to get? For example, the argument I made is, well, maybe platinum is a lesser case than iron ore or maybe chrome, but we have certain advantages in certain categories. Maybe that's wrong. And maybe, to some extent, we might be getting, $100 million worth of platinum investment, but if we do these incentives, we'll get $200 of platinum investment. So the debate is, should it be all or should it be some? But I think we really need to be getting advised by the DME on that.
Well, thanks. I think one major point to probably touch on the definition. That's what our discussion. I get your point that you we box it in as you do, but do it carefully when you box it in. You must make sure that you do that carefully. You don't damage. Boxing is always much more damaging. Let's do this definition, because you see, it will help us. It will help us to understand what is it that we are talking about. It has always been a debate, I know, particularly from the minerals and energy. But there is the bottom line. You see, whatever we do, as the department will go back and look at this thing together with the treasurer, should not affect others, Section 11, which has to do with prospecting and so on. It should not. That's one thing against it. Because, see, this piece of legislation, MTRPA, is one of the most fundamental pieces of legislation we have. So whatever comes in here would need this microscopic eye, because we do not want to end up in a situation where actually the very upcoming small scale mining is affected through this process. So you'll be able to look at that. As we say, it should not affect others, what we get. Now, I think that, thank you, Professor. We will go for tea after what I will say, not now. we have. Mr. Daniel, who is the chief law, the chief state law advisor. Okay. No, would one on a matter I hope he has been following, if you are here, on the matter relating to environment, with this bill we have in front of us. If we can have a word from you. On the issue, because the major issue here is on the competent authority and the fact that the view from the Department of Minerals and Energy is that it should be cutting across, not only on certain sections, for instance, not if it's cross-border, cross-provincial borders, not if it's a specified. What is this? Yeah, but they did specify the area, whatever protected area, the common. So if we can get an idea from that point, that legal point, the political point to deal with, we'll be able to. So we'll give those few minutes to you, Daniel.
thank you very much. Good morning to you, gentlemen. Chair Benson, we played a rather unusual role over the course of the past couple of weeks. In the sense we spoke about boxing earlier and scoring. Well, I was very free. I was very free between DME and DEAT. Since then we were called upon to mediate essentially two policy differences. It related essentially to the competence authority and the role which the DME would have vis-a-vis the EAP. And it would appear to me that the parties were in agreement on the following, and they can correct me, and I was just a mediator. In fact, we had a meeting last night as well with DME. We had a video conference with DEAP and DME, and we had a meeting in my office, with which we had substantial and in-depth discussions on the issue. For mining and mining-related matters, including prospecting, the general view was that the competent authority should be the Minister of Minerals and Energy, and for any other mining, any other environmental activity, it should be DEAP. Then we proposed a particular wording for the competent authority to be included in the MTRPA, and we also proposed the wording to be included in NEMA relating to the competent authority. Although initially there appeared to be an agreement on the wording, DME pointed out to us last night that the formulation of a competent authority in NEMA is possibly open to different interpretations. We considered that as the law advised, and we concluded that DME's observations were probably correct in the sense that the way we had worded the competent authority in NEMA that conveyed slightly the position to the way we had formulated it under the MPRDA. And so we proposed a change to that, and we have changed the wording. Essentially, it says the same thing, but it's slightly clearer. And then there was a little bit of a disagreement between DME and DEET relating to the regulations. And so we incorporated a section, or rather proposed some wording, which we understood at the time satisfied both DME and DEAD regarding the use of those regulations. And essentially, everybody appeared to be in agreement that the regulations under NEMA would apply to mining and mining-related activities, but that those regulations are supplemented. And by supplement, we understand if it means by DME would be able to add to that or to subtract from that. That was the general agreement. Last night in our meeting with DME, there was further concern raised by DME that in fact the regulations, the formulation that we have proposed encompasses things which don't necessarily relate to mining and it shouldn't be included in that formulation. Well, we were just the mediators and the arbitrators and we just the people who are the lawyers in the draft, and so we amended that formulation. We have prepared a document which we think now captures the concerns of DEAD and DME and which we think will satisfy the concerns that everybody has. That document is available and we are now in your hands, Chair. Thank you.
And that document has been seen by the player, not the fighter, who had the reference.
You see, as the referee, we did make it available to both parties. Joanne Yost of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism called me early this morning at about 7 o'clock. She had understood there was a problem. I explained to her what the difficulties were from the side of DME. I explained to her that it did appear that possibly the formulation for a competent authority in NEMA may be open to different interpretations, and I also explained to her that we have tightened up and tidied up the wording of that. She appeared to be happy with that. I can't, of course, speak on behalf of DAT, but it seems she was comfortable with that. Thank you, Peter.
This is what we'll do now. We will just get some cold water here, and we have some food here. And cold tea and cold everything. For 5 minutes, come back and round up this meeting. Thank you.
Are there copies of the presentation on here?
Yeah, you have to check.
I'll take you in the middle of the same as the one we got from.
Thank you. I'm going to send. Because now he wants to send the document to Jan now. We don't get the documentation. We haven't agreed on anything. You are, I mean, they're basically saying you haven't seen the document. I've interested in everybody. Yeah. We're not going to decide now. We've given them an alternative wording to that section so that we can basically include what we've agreed on. And now, I mean, it's completely different.
Yes, I did. I'm just a bit confused.
Yeah. Yeah, but the comments. Yeah, comments can be sure. Elena is busy looking at it at the moment, right?
And then when?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
Of this document.
Yes.
Could it be possible to learn?
I don't know
what to do. I've got your email address.
You've got my email?
Yes.
Okay, I can send you.
Okay.
Okay, you can send me a note.
I'm not sure if we've got a card yet, otherwise I can stop and follow.
Well, thank you, Member. Now, because of this and because of the fact that we think that we need to tie up some of the things, we will not be in a position on Friday, on the 15th, to finalize this. We'll give everybody an opportunity to go consult and consult, and that's it. We are not going to be having an ending consultation. That's what happened. On the 20th of this month, that would be after June 16th, after the heat day, a very important day, we will come back having rejuvenated. I hope all of us will be young by then, also from a youth day. That includes the Honorable F.K. Lowe. Lucas. So we'll come back, we'll do both formal and informal. Are you? No, we'll talk now. We'll come back, we'll do both formal and informal, we'll do informal and formal. So, when you leave your home on Wednesday morning, just have bad calls, because we'll have to have the whole day here. If we need to apply in Parliament, we'll do that. Do those. And finally, adopt what will be a sacrifice. That's all. 20 years is the day. Thank you very much, Member. Thanks, for the department. Thank you. Till we meet again. Bye.